You're going to have one additional primary care team member that you can delegate tasks to that can act on your behalf and that will continuously learn and that is infinitely scalable.
Welcome to the Convergence on ReachMD, where innovators and physicians explore the technology transforming medicine. I'm Dr. Brian McDonough, and today's guest, Jean-Claude Sagbini from Lumeris, has built something that sounds too good to be true, an AI agent that actually reduces physician burnout. It's called Tom, and it's designed to be your AI team member. It's handling routine tasks, flagging what needs attention, and letting doctors focus on being doctors. Jean-Claude, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the problem you're solving. What's the 2 billion hour gap in primary care? And why is it so important to address?
Yeah, it's an alarming and sizable problem. 100 million Americans are without primary care. If we were to provide evidence-based care to them through human hours, the cost of that would be 2 billion hours at about $1 trillion of spend, which we don't have the hours, we don't have the resources, and the spend would be too high. In short, what we have is a classic supply-demand imbalance. The demand by far exceeds the available supply. And what we are doing is bringing agentic AI with Tom to rebalance that supply-demand equation.
Now, you're a CTO who's worked at Wolters Kluwer, Cardinal Health, so obviously you have a deep healthcare tech experience. What made you focus on this problem specifically?
Yeah, so I've had a sort of an interesting career in healthcare. Started in 2005. I thought it was going to be easy. So the common thread of that was two things: solutions that have a positive impact on health and outcomes, and a reduction in costs. And the thread started in supply chain, in OR workflows, procedural workflows. And as I kept learning more and more, the idea of providing evidence-based sort of medicine and supporting physicians in that journey became more appealing to me. So the time I spent at Wolters Kluwer with UpToDate, that was certainly a huge component, given the clinical decision support impact that UpToDate and Wolters Kluwer Health has. And then more recently, the past 5 years at Lumeris, partnering with health systems to truly impact at the N of one patient, getting that evidence-based care to that patient. So it's been an interesting long journey, and I'm super excited now because I'm seeing the impact being ever stronger.
Well, you know, AI tools have been promised for years. This moment seems different. What's changed that makes something like Tom feasible now? I mean, why is this happening now, you know, rather than 5 years from now even?
Yeah, so why now? So you're right. AI has been around for a very long time, right? It had what we call AI winters. So several AI winters where AI gets a lot of attention, then sort of dies off, then attention, then dies off. And from a technical point of view, there were like compute considerations, right? And the cost of computations was extremely high. From a clinical point of view, what AI was doing for many years is surfacing yet one more thing that physicians did not pay attention to and give them one more task to do. And while that's admirable, if we go back to the point I made earlier about the supply-demand equation, the problem is that you can surface even more demand. The problem is that the supply wasn't there. And with the arrival of agentic AI, it finally gave us this set of tools where now we can take action, right? We can use the generative AI capabilities to not only surface gaps and alert, but actually take the action. And it's by taking the action that we're providing the supply. And that's why it's now. I mean, it's super exciting that we're able to do it.
I want to talk a little bit about what Tom actually does. And you know, this really is right up my alley as a primary care physician. You have a scenario. I'm in the office. It's Tuesday morning. what does Tom actually do for me that's different from my current workflow? And believe me, our listeners have a current workflow, probably a lot like mine and pretty similar. What does Tom do?
Really good question. Maybe you'll find it as a weird answer because I'm going to answer it to what's happening outside of your office, and then I'll get to the office. So, you walk into your practice on a Tuesday morning. In the background, Tom is engaging with all of the patients that you are not seeing today. That's the actual power, right? Is that Tom is engaging with many patients in between visits, and you're able to, as a physician, impact the totality of the patients that you are responsible for, not just the 20 that you are seeing today. So what Tom is doing is calling 4 patients to schedule them for colonoscopies, nudging 12 patients on getting a flu shot and sending them to the nearest pharmacy, providing education to 4 of them who are wondering whether they should get a flu shot or not, reaching out to 17 diabetic patients to check on their blood sugar level, calling 5 patients who were in the office a few days ago that you prescribed a new medication for them to check if they picked up the new medication and how things are going with them, calling one of the patients who just got discharged from the hospital yesterday and checking in on them and scheduling them for a visit with you in a few days to make sure they see you post-discharge, calling the 20 patients who will show up tomorrow and reminding them of the visit and checking in and doing a pre-visit check-in with them and summarizing that to you. So now all of that is happening to all the patients that you are not seeing.
Yeah, that's a full day's work for us and our entire staff doing all everything you just talked about, the metrics, the reminders, the appointments, the follow-up, all of those things can take an inordinate amount of time and resources.
Yeah, yeah. And now, going back to your core question, which is I walk into my practice, what am I experiencing? One is you're seeing your patients, and then you are getting in your workflow alerts to some patients that to whom you have given a new medication who picked it up, started taking it, and is giving them stomach pain. And they're considering what to do. Do they keep taking it or not? And you are nudged on that now versus 3 months from now when you see them and you realize they stopped taking their medication. During the visit, Tom is expressing to you as a physician, again, in your EHR workflow, that, hey, this patient that you are seeing now express to Tom that they have these 2 or 3 topics they want to bring up to you, and you're aware of what they want to talk about. You're getting summarization of their pre-visit check-in and how they're doing. You're also being nudged by Tom on some recommendations based on the totality of their medical record and things they have expressed to Tom in conversation to say, hey, I recommend that you look at XYZ physician, right?
So when we do, let's say, a chart prep, in traditional medicine, you come in as my patient, I prep the chart, kind of get a sense of what you're here for and why. This is also done for you, and there's more. There's suggestions, there's ideas, so when you read this, you're kind of reading a fully formed commentary. So when you walk in, it's like somebody's prepped you totally.
Exactly. You're walking in and their blood sugar level looks like this over the past 2 months. They're doing okay. They also want to talk to you about an ankle pain that they started experiencing a couple of weeks back, and they want to bring that up in their regular visit.
And if I'm getting this right, Tom's already got a lot of the information for what Tom was doing prior to the visit. It might have been through the portal, might have been phone calls. It's just gathering all that information from the chart and the conversations.
Exactly. That's that long tirade I went through.
Right. But that comes to you, and right off the bat, people who see patients get this, you're saving an incredible amount of time. It's allowing you to focus with your patient on issues you really want to focus on as well.
Exactly.
So that happens in there. And then there's, I guess, the documentation and how about a clinical decision support, those things.
Yeah. So in terms of clinical decision support, to the extent that Tom detects things in the patient's medical record combined with things that Tom has gathered in between visits through all the multiple interactions, Tom can express to you recommendations in clinical decision support. Tom doesn't take the action, but can express to you, we call it best clinical advice, can express advice to the primary care physician, as well as the evidence supporting the advice, either from the record or from medical literature. One more thing I want to bring up, though, is it's a key point of Tom, is that, now, I described all this to you, and you say, well, how does access expand? That's great. It reduces my burden, but how did access change? The idea is that when I finish this visit, and knowing that you as a patient have interacted with Tom over the past 3 months, and I have a good summary of how you've been doing over the past 3 months, maybe my next visit with you can be in 5 months, not 3 months from now. Knowing that Tom is engaging with you, and to the extent that you actually need to be seen way sooner than that, Tom will alert me, right? So it gives me this sort of sense of comfort as a physician that in between visits, it used to be desert of information, right? Now I have tons of information. I don't necessarily need to look at it, but Tom is engaging and collecting that information. And to the extent that, you know, something urgent is popping up, Tom will alert me, and maybe I need to see you sooner.
And this also would help for people, as we know, who often they're lost to follow up. You have a tickler file, make sure they do this test or that. You see it. It might be a sticky note in your chart, but basically it doesn't happen. And then you see somebody later on and find out they haven't been taking their medicine. They haven't been doing this. They haven't been doing that. And now nothing happened and you lost 4 months. So in addition to the patients you're seeing, would you also have updates on patients that you're not seeing through Tom? I mean, if they don't have appointments, or how does that work at this point?
Yes, you would have information about the totality of your patient panel, the patients that are showing up regularly, don't show up. As long as they are in your patient panel as a primary care physician, then Tom manages that panel for you on your behalf.
As far as after the visit, we're talking about some of the things that happened, but also it looks like a lot of the care coordination issues and those things, referrals, they're also supported by Tom?
Yes, exactly. So post-visit, Tom picks up that information that just happened out of your visit because of the connectivity into the EHR. And then Tom manages a series of things after that. Let's take two examples, right? The medication example and maybe a referral example. On the medication example, Tom realizes that you have got put on new medication and ensures that you did pick up the medication, that it's working for you, that everything is okay. Tom also picks up on the fact that you have a referral to a specialist, and Tom connects with you on that, ensures that you do go through your referral, that you do stay within the network, because that matters for care continuity. So explains to you why that referral matters, reminds you of that specialist visit when that specialist visit is coming up, and then resends that information back to your primary care physician. Often what we see is that you as a primary care physician, you do a referral and you don't know what happened downstream. And nothing sort of sends you information back and tells you, did it go okay? Is it scheduled? Hey, it's not scheduled. By the way, just FYI, the patient has not done anything about it yet. So Tom closes the loop back into the primary care team so that you continue having full visibility as a primary care physician to the totality of the care of your patients.
So Jean-Claude, I have a diabetic patient due for a hemoglobin A1C, let's say. What does Tom do that our team currently does manually?
Yeah. So Tom can call the patient, text the patient, recall the patient, try them again. If the patient says, call me back later, explain to them why they need it, explain what it is. Send them educational video on what it means to take an HbA1c, schedule them and or transfer them to wherever your landing point is to schedule them. So Tom can take on the totality of that action. And given that Tom is infinitely scalable, Tom can adjust to the patient's preferences and or availability versus be limited by your staff. Once they run out of time, whatever gaps were not closed will remain unclosed.
So you call Tom an agentic AI. Most doctors at this point in our careers, we hear AI, We think of chatbots, diagnostic aids. Again, what's different about this kind of an agent?
Yeah, so agentic AI means that the agent can accomplish an end-to-end task autonomously. It's different than you using AI to support you in things you want to do because you have an objective, and then you ask AI something, you ask Gemini a question, Gemini gives you an answer, and then you go about your way. And these are chatbot experiences. An agentic experience is the HbA1c we just talked about now, right? The objective is to reach out to you, explain to you, and schedule you. And Tom takes on the totality of that experience in one shot. And that's why we're excited.
How can I trust that Tom isn't making mistakes that I don't catch? It's running wild or something like that. How do I know?
These are the right questions to ask about all AI. I mean, I think these are important questions to always ask, but not only ask, to put governance and structure around to make sure that doesn't happen. The way we approach it is one, through a very robust governance framework whenever we put any sort of AI capability out there. Two is, although Tom can and is designed to do more than what it does, we have put very strong guardrails and we test very intensely against these guardrails around not diagnosing, not treating, right? So Tom is guardrailed against doing that. And then we validate that through extreme heavy duty testing that then goes to our governance structure that then validates that all of these things have happened before we are launching any component into the market.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to The Convergence on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Brian McDonough, and I'm speaking with Jean-Claude Sagbini of Lumeris. And we're talking about Tom, agentic AI. And I know you've been working with large language models and test cases in using them and referring to them. Can you walk us through how you built Tom to be safe for clinical use?
Yeah, so again, it goes to the point I mentioned a second ago around governance. And when we now think about quality, it used to be we think about quality as software quality in healthcare technology. And now we have this clinical quality, but we also acknowledge there's a non-deterministic set of outputs that come of large language models. The way to validate these models, they're non-deterministic by nature, is to do extreme testing of use cases. And this is what we put in place with the attempt of breaking it. So we have, you know, we have teams and individuals whose sole purpose is to actually break the system. And early on, it was, I mean, a couple of years ago, it was easy to break it, right? Because we had not thought about all the components. And now we're actually at a point where we are extremely confident of what we are putting out there. Yet those teams are continuously building test cases to break it. We also have test cases on, not just on clinical break it, but on from a HIPAA point of view, are you breaking it from a divulging information that AI shouldn't divulge? So we have a series of criteria that we try to break the system against with intense test cases to do that.
It's fascinating. So you're really in there trying to outsmart it, break it, do every possible thing you can to it. We know one of the things in our world that's been big for decades now is HIPAA and the clinical standards and all those things. Is Tom compliant? Have you built Tom to be compliant with these things?
100%. Exactly. 100% HIPAA compliant. We had been working on primary care transformations with different technologies. Like this is an add-on technology to our core platform for about 15 years. So our technology stack has been and continues to be HIPAA compliant in one of the most robust fashions. And what we have done is as we added generative AI capabilities to our technology stack, we sort of grandfathered that under our full compliance security umbrella. And as such, And we manage it with the same rigor that we've always done it with.
In a previous life, in my clinical role as a chief health informatics officer, we work with go lives with all these different computer systems, and it was always tough to have workflows and one EHR talking to another. How does Tom actually integrate? Because obviously you're going to be dealing with hospitals and practices and others that use many different systems. We're not all using one. So how does it integrate? And is this something that you have to customize for every health system, or is it something that would work across the board?
Yeah. So an ethos that we have is that we have to integrate into the EHR workflow if we want to get physicians' attentions for all the reasons that you've probably experienced. Getting physicians out of their workflow is a no-no. So the answer is then yes. We integrate with the EHRs. It's two-way integration. So one is we integrate with the EHRs in the most basic form, which is get information from the EHR so that everything Tom does is contextual to the patients. And then the second form is that as we are expressing insights and all the things we talked about earlier, we are integrating in a non-interruptive way in EHR workflows.
So when you're doing, I guess, without getting too technical, you have to work with the different companies. You work with them and try to get the bugs out, so to speak?
Exactly. Yeah. We use, you know, sort of non-custom standard integration methodologies, and we integrate with them.
Now, one of the things that I found toughest was the human element. You know, going back to the days of CPOE and asking physicians to get on board and then training, doing different things and spending the time. Change management is really tough. It may be one of the toughest things in this area because a lot of us as docs, we just don't want change. We get used to what we're doing, and change, especially change in the electronic health world, has always seemed like it meant more work over many years. You know, pajama time, doing charts when you never even used to bring a chart home. All of those promises that were there were met with extra work. How can you get physicians to trust this, and how do you bring them on board?
Yeah, so that is a good problem to mention, because ultimately, if Tom is a primary care team member, then by definition, not only do you have to gain the trust of the patients, but you have to gain the trust of the primary care physicians, because Tom is their team member. So the way we do that is, so it's two things in change management, right? It's make it easy and trustworthy, right? And you have to hit both. Make it easy is through anything that's expressed is in the workflow, and anything outside of my workflow is happening behind the scenes by Tom managing my patients, and certainly not flooding me with tasks to do, right? So Tom takes off work versus gives me work to do. From a trust point of view, there is no turn it on and everything goes live, right? At the end of the day, we call it onboarding. What will Tom be able to do on your behalf? And typically, health systems and physicians start with the simplest of things that Tom can do, primarily gaps in care closure, and then evolve into more advanced chronic condition management. And so the trust is gained by the early things, the reminders, the scheduling, the pre-visit check-ins, the closing gaps in care, et cetera. And then the evolution happens into more advanced condition management.
The cynic in me would say, after many years of go lives and working, is, you know, I've always asked companies across the board, can you do this? And the answer is, yeah, we can do that. And then later we'd find out, well, we'll cost this much to do that. And if we do that, it's going to be this much work. And so we've seen a lot of AI tools that sound promising, but don't work in the real world. What's your deployment looking like right now? What's different here?
What's different is that, one, it's a newer generation of AI that can do work versus surface gaps, which is foundational. But the second part, which actually we're extremely proud of, is it's relatively easy to create agentic AI components, right? The tools are very powerful, right? You can actually create point solution, standalone services, you know, in a relatively fast way. The tough part becomes, how do you connect them all together into an experience that is highly orchestrated, that is plugged into the underlying data and insights derived on populations? And because we grew up in that world of data, data aggregation, our platform aggregates data from claims and EHR and social determinants of health and you name it. So we grew up bottoms up, if you will, right? Understanding data, aggregating data, normalizing it, deriving insights, computing insights. And now as we are building these agentic services, we are plugging them into a very mature platform. And that's what we are excited about. It's all expressed in things that are conversational and text-based, et cetera. But when you double-click and drill to see what's under the surface, you see a very mature platform that has been supporting health systems for years.
Yeah, we were always immersed with all that discrete data and what couldn't be reflected through the conversation and from other things. And I know you're in the real world testing this and looking at it. My understanding is Tom's deployed at some Lumera's health system partners. So what are you seeing? Is it working? Are doctors using it? What's the experience now as far as the real world application?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, like Tom is a platform, right? So end to end, you have literally bytes coming in on one side with data ingestion capabilities. All the way on the other side are EHR integrations, conversational capabilities, different components deployed in different places. The examples I'm excited about, those are the ones that are patient facing. When you have an 89-year-old person who not only is having a conversation with AI, but is actually excited about the novelty of having a conversation with AI. When you have people sharing very intimate sort of details about their healthcare conditions with AI, because they are trusting the fact that this is provided to them by their providers, and the fact that the output of that conversation is something that's going to be additive to their provider team to be able to provide them with better care. We've all also had the occasional, I don't want to talk to AI, I'm just going to put it out there, and that's okay, right? I think we're at the beginning of this journey. Everybody's getting exposed and excited about AI, so that's helping a lot. And we actually intentionally asked some patients to interview them after some of their experiences to get firsthand knowledge from them. How was it, right? How was it engaging with AI? And one that I sort of recall is a patient who said, look, you know, what I'm excited about is that I often go to my physician and I forget what I want to talk about. The fact that the summary of this conversation will be expressed to my primary care physician is extremely important to me because I'm not worried about forgetting what I'm going to talk about. So again, I think these are the kinds of things that are, when you launching solutions of this scale, this is the risk you can, like, will humans and patients engage with AI? And the answer is yes.
We're talking about, obviously, a lot of the good stuff, and there is a lot of good stuff to unpack. But from an honest standpoint, where does Tom fail? Like, what can it do yet that you wish it could do or you're frustrated it's not doing?
Yeah, a good question. Expanding, for example, our multi-language support. The technologies are there for that. The question is that, how do you test that at scale? The majority of people in the country, like our, you know, team members, et cetera, you speak one, two, maybe three languages. As you expand into many, many languages, like, for example, you asked me this question, that's top of mind for me, is that how do we test, you know, a multitude of languages with the same rigor that you are testing English, for example?
So you're modeling it with the English language, but what if you go to Spanish or Mandarin or whatever, that you don't know if you might run into other issues?
Exactly. Yeah, developing it is easy, actually. It's more, how do you test it at scale with languages that you don't have enough people in your enterprise who speak that language?
Right. The other thing we get with AI, and I think across the board, people are concerned in every job. They're sitting there going, is this going to, am I going to be out of a job? Like, am I going to be out of work? Because Tom's automating tasks that nurses, the MAs, care coordinators, other people are doing. Will it impact team members' roles? Will it people lose their job? Are they going to have to change their focus? What do you envision?
Yeah, so it's a good question. This is a common question. And I think first, it's the 100 million Americans who are not getting access to care. I don't see at all a risk to jobs, or to a certain extent, maybe jobs become more exciting and satisfying because people start practicing at top of their license. But given that supply-demand imbalance is so high, this is not about reducing operational expenses or replacing human providers. This is how to use that scarce, highly skilled supply of human providers to support a much larger patient population that today does not have access to proper care.
And probably also what we saw when we introduced EHR to hospitals and systems, some were better at helping people find new roles in that healthcare environment because their other role might have been eliminated too. That, you know, they kind of got ahead of it. And I think the better organizations said, hey, you know, your role in 12 months will probably be gone once we go live. Would you be interested in this or that? Providing other opportunities for those who want and the necessary training. So I think you're right, especially with the workplace shortage right now. This could be helpful. And again, improving access is what we're all about. The other issue is, you know, and again, I worked with a large health system that had a lot of resources, but even with a lot of resources, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars across hospitals and money taken from care, in a sense, to get those tools in there. Since COVID, a lot of these healthcare systems don't necessarily have the resources. They're working on 1% and 2% margins. How do you get them to do the investment for something they may not see the results for until several years down the road? Do you see that as a barrier?
Yeah. Given the type of technology that this is, right, which is ultimately engaging and driving connectivity into patients, we see the results, the financial results of these investments show up much sooner than other technologies, right, that have a sort of a long runway until you get sort of ROI. So in a way, in this instance, the ROI materializes much faster than in historical technologies that I've been involved myself as well in, right? I've been in health tech for 20 years now, and some of those technologies you deploy and then you have like a 5-year roadmap of when ROI will show up, et cetera. Here, it materializes much, much faster. It's also because the urgency of the problem is there, right? Like, it's a problem that's waiting to be solved versus uncovering an opportunity to go tackle.
Yeah, I see two roads that will help this. One is, I think anybody out there taking care of patients now realizes we need to expand care to those who are underserved, not getting served. And the other thing I think is, this will be much better received because it's starting to show. In fact, it is showing what a lot of us were hoping when we were going through the drudgery of going from paper to computers. It was a lot of drudgery without much return, and now we're starting to get it. So I think you're going to see that, plus hopefully younger physicians and others in healthcare also are much more aware, and this is part of their lives, which gets me to a question of a note I jotted down about democratizing access. You know, will you be able to get this out and around so that it'll be able to be used, you know, in big healthcare centers and small ones and practices, those side of things?
To the point you just made now, a big chunk of lack of access is happening in rural America. And we actually just announced the creation of the Collaborative for Healthy Rural America, CHRA, with a series of partners, including Teladoc and UniteUS. And through these integrations with the various partners, just like it works for a health system, Tom is able to work in a region where populations are living in rural settings that are geographically sort of disconnected from large health systems and from access. And Tom is able to provide them access, again, through this CHRA partnership.
And we've read that you announced a partnership with MIT's Computational Biology Lab. What is all that about, and where is Tom going?
Yeah, so this is next gen R&D. So what we want to do is, we're excited about what we have, but technology is evolving extremely rapidly. So through the partnership with MIT and also our partnership with Google, announced that also a few months back, we're excited because we are able to and want to continue being future-looking and remain in sync with the art of the possible, right? We want to be developing at the art of the possible. So we have our delivery teams that are building the product, delivering the product, implementing the product, et cetera, and our advanced R&D teams who are continuously looking at what is the art of the possible and how do I build to that, and then take those capabilities and then put them on our roadmap once we see that they are functioning.
If I'm a primary care doctor listening, what should I be preparing for? You know, what will be different in my practice in 3 to 5 years with your glasses and vision?
Yeah. I mean, it's simple. You're going to have one additional primary care team member that you can delegate tasks to that can act on your behalf and that will continuously learn and that is infinitely scalable.
Pretty good. I want to ask you this question too. What are, say, three things primary care providers need to know about how AI tools like Tom could impact their practice?
Yeah, so top three. Providers need to remain in control and at the center of the primary care delivery model. That's number one. Number two is Tom and other AI tools are here to scale them to deliver more care to their patients and provide access to a broader set of patients. And then maybe my third point is that the tools will continue to evolve. And now is the time to start and not just ride the wave, but if you start early, you can shape the wave.
Interesting you say that. I think it's true that you can get involved early. So for physicians listening, who want to stay ahead of, maybe they never heard the term agentic AI until we were throwing it around in this interview. What should they be learning? Or what should they be reading or following? What do you think would help them?
I think you should be doing it. I think this is a space, highly experiential space. And the best way to learn it and understand its capability is by actually implementing something at your practice.
Jean-Paul Sagbini, I want to thank you for helping us understand not just what Tom does, but also what agentic AI means for the future of primary care. I really appreciate it, and I thank you for taking the time to join us. It's been great.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. This was an exciting conversation.
You've been listening to the Convergence on ReachMD, where innovators and physicians explore the technology transforming medicine. To hear more about other technological advances shaping the future of healthcare, visit The Convergence on ReachMD.com, where you can be part of the knowledge.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.